let's just pray together. Lord, as I speak my words, may you speak to our hearts. Amen.
Amen.
Well, we're coming to the end of our series on the fruit of the Spirit. If you look at that pear over there, you'll see that it's full. Quite a collection of different items. Today we've got two for the price of one. So you've got a real bargain. Humility and self-control. Those are the two parts of the fruit of the Spirit that I want to talk about this evening. I'm going to take them in reverse order though, because it suits my purposes better. I don't think it really makes that much difference. So we're going to start with self-control. I think it's probably one of the most difficult of the characteristics of the fruit of the Spirit to actually discuss. It might be asking the obvious, but how do we actually get the fruit of the Spirit? Do we apply for it, fill in an application form and send it off through the post? Well, obviously not. Do we think it comes automatically, like getting a free gift when we subscribe to a magazine? In other words, it comes automatic as soon as we become a Christian. Does it come as a package like that? If you think it comes like that, and God gives it to us automatically, then I suppose it's reasonable to think that he's responsible for the fruit of the Spirit. And the reason that follows that is, if I as a Christian don't have the fruit of the Spirit, it's because God didn't put it in there in the first place. In other words, if I'm not acting in a loving or kind way, or I'm not practicing self-control, it's because God hasn't put love and kindness in me. God hasn't given me the strength that it takes to restrain my habits. So it's his fault, not mine. I think a lot of this thinking stems from the idea that the minute we decide to accept Jesus, that's it, the deed's done. We're saved, we don't need to do anything else. We can sit back and relax and enjoy life. Of course, most of us realise that Christian life is nothing like that. Paul stresses time and time again in his letters that we are on a journey. A journey of learning more about Jesus. We're being moulded into what we should be. It's a gradual process, not a one-off event. Consequently, we have our part to play. We have to recognise when self-control is required. That might mean resisting temptation. It might mean being careful what we say to others. Not just what we say, but the way that we say it. And we might need a prayer or two occasionally to enable us to achieve self-control. But the ultimate responsibility for controlling our actions and words is ours. Paul wrote in Romans 12, verse 2, "Don't conform any longer to the pattern of this world." That's putting the onus on us. And that takes self-control. And sometimes we need strength greater than that we've got within ourselves. So let's move on to the other characteristic of the fruit, humility. The reading that we had from Paul's letter to the Romans is about Christians having different gifts and about them all being equally important, all working together, not thinking your gift's better than somebody else's. So yes, that's about humility. But I want to take a different view of the place of humility in the Christian. And I'd like to be slightly controversial this evening, which is unusual for me. Hopefully, though, you'll go away with something to think about. What does it mean to be humble? to be ever so humble, as we hear from Uriah Heep, gentleman in David Copperfield by Charles Dickens. To say you are humble is actually a paradox. If you go around like Uriah Heep does, saying, I'm ever so humble, it means exactly the opposite. By saying you are a humble person, you're making out to be something special. And if you're special, you can't be humble. And Uriah Heep, if you know the story, was anything but humble. He was a scheming, nasty character, only interested in himself. What then is humility? Now, C.S. Lewis gave a very good definition of humility, I think. Humility is not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less. I'll say it again. Humility is not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less. So how does this fit in with being a Christian? Let's think about the Bible. It's always a good place to start. As you know, that's the book that Christians regard as their holy book. It's got 66 books divided into the Old and the New Testaments. And we often forget, when we carry on reading the Bible, is that the Old Testament was around long, long before the New Testament. And is often called, quite rightly, the Hebrew Bible. And one of its fundamental ideas is that the Hebrew nation was a cut above the rest. The God of the Hebrews was exclusive. He was only the God of the Hebrews, they said. If the world was to be saved, it had to look to the Hebrew nation as a light to the nations. And the New Testament is a curious mixture of Old Testament superiority and a radically new way of looking at life. On the one hand, there's this sort of triumphalist vein which proclaims that Jesus is the only complete answer to life's problems. On the other hand, Jesus himself, again and again, refused to allow barriers of religion, ritual cleanliness, and ethnic origin to rule his life. He would talk to anybody. His God was not a God of a superior people, but one to whom everybody could relate. Jesus' approach was the opposite of the exclusiveness of his fellow Jews. That's what got him into a lot of trouble. And Paul was successful precisely because he continued in the Jesus way. If he followed the Hebrew way, and don't forget, Paul was a good Jew, he would have preached Hebrew superiority. And if he had championed Jesus as a Hebrew Messiah, I expect Christianity would have died out long ago, simply as a Jewish sect. Yet, some Christians today still operate from the Old Testament point of view. They insist that the Christian way is the only way. They preach that others must accept Christ as the final answer or pay the penalty of eternal suffering in a fiery hell. That is not, I hasten to say, limited to Christians. The word infidel is bandied about by many opposing factions. There's a particular hero of mine, he may be of yours, I don't know, Archbishop Desmond Tutu, and he wrote a wonderful book called God is Not a Christian. God is Not a Christian. Neither was Jesus, of course. See, even the title makes you think. People who think they are superior require those who differ to submit to them. You only have to read the stories of some of the early missionaries to discover the lack of humility that drove their words and their actions. See, absolute truth, by definition, denies others the right to question. And you may think of other religions where you're not allowed to question. It doesn't allow, it can't allow, independent thought. The teaching of those who are superior must be accepted by those of us that are the inferior. The Christian claims to absolute truth. Well, those claims still persist with many today. It can't affirm that other faiths might relate fully to God. Humility, on the other hand, listens. It asks and explores, knowing that any answers that I come up with are provisional and may change. Humility remains willing to accept that others may flourish in God's eyes, even though they grow and attain spiritual maturity in other than the Christian faith. I applaud those, including our own Bishop David, who are willing to engage with those of other faiths, to try and understand their point of view, rather than convert them to Christianity. At the back, though, I think there's still some there, the new booklet on transforming churches. The 10th diocesan goal is about relating constructively with those of other faiths. This requires humility, as it always does when we're relating to the many denominations within Christianity itself. In 2001, the World Christian Encyclopedia counted 33,830 different Christian denominations. And of course, only one is right. The one we belong to. Isn't it strange how difficult we find in humility to relate to those who differ from us in all sorts of ways, such as culture, class, faith, or religion? We do find it so difficult. When our leader, I think was called Jesus, didn't find any difficulties whatsoever.